This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Some major opioid businesses win a big one. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Major distributors of opioid painkillers have prevailed in a West Virginia court. Two local governments had sued, saying the distributors, separate from the drug makers, they were trying to show that these distributors shared some blame for the painkiller crisis that has killed nearly 500,000 Americans. Marketplace's Nova Safo reports.
The ruling follows a pattern in opioid epidemic-related civil court cases. When a judge hears a case, drug companies tend to prevail. When a jury hears a case, those suing prevail. In this instance, a city and a county in West Virginia sued drug distributors McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health, claiming they created a public nuisance by flooding communities with addictive painkillers. Public nuisance arguments are the prevailing legal strategy in these cases. The federal judge in the West Virginia case was unconvinced, ruling the drug distributors were not responsible for the addiction crisis because they were fulfilling legally written prescriptions. The three drug distributors have agreed to a $26 billion nationwide settlement to resolve thousands of similar lawsuits. But the two governments in West Virginia opted out of that settlement and took their case to court, seeking more compensation. They were asking for $2.5 billion to help fight opioid addiction in their communities. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
I should do the numbers. Dow and S&P futures are both down about 0.5%. A euro costs $1.03 this morning, lowest in 20 years. Could one-to-one parity be far behind? A euro equals a dollar. U.S. interest rates are going up faster than Europe's, which takes the shine off of euros. Great if you're an American traveling there, where things will seem cheap. Lousy if you're a U.S. exporter, since it makes your stuff more expensive to sell in Europe. Although flight delays eased by the 4th of July itself, earlier in the holiday weekend was a mess, with about 1,400 flights canceled. Staff shortages are a common refrain. You may ask, where is the accountability? Well, apparently some from Europe. The chief operating officer of low-cost carrier EasyJet has now resigned. After thousands of flights were canceled on that one airline last month, EasyJet has tended to blame airport and air traffic snafus, but it's become clearer there is a staffing problem as well.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
With Russia putting the extra squeeze on Europe's natural gas supplies, it's now Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands firing backup power plants that use coal, a fuel that puts out not quite twice the climate-changing carbon dioxide compared to gas. Recently back from Germany is Vijay Vaitheswaran, the Global Energy and Climate Innovation Editor at The Economist magazine. Vijay, welcome.
Hello there.
All right. You want to keep the heat and the lights on in Europe. But what does this do to Europe's climate targets? I mean, they'd agreed to these targets.
You're right. Climate ambition in Europe was perhaps the highest in the world coming out of the UN summit, the so-called COP26 summit in Scotland end of last year. But what we're really seeing is that energy security is threatening to push climate sideways, maybe even backwards for 5 or 10 years, unless Europe finds a way to thread the needle. And that's a lesson that California, Australia, other places in the world that are trying to balance climate and energy security can learn from.
Well, you're on the ground in Germany recently, I understand. What's the thinking there regarding coal?
Coal is getting a short-term reprieve in that they're actually encouraging coal plants to run at a higher capacity utilization rate in the short term, which is terrible for the climate, because they don't want to have blackouts. And so they're trying to find all manner of alternatives. Increasing coal production a bit is one of them. They're politically constrained from putting their nuclear power because they've decided to shut them down. So that really leaves them with trying to get as many renewables on the grid as quickly as possible. And that one questionable choice from the point of view of the Greens, natural gas, as the bridge.
Now, you've been reporting on the great energy transition, not just in Europe, but globally. Engineers would love to find a way to grab the CO2 before it gets out there in the atmosphere and squirrel this carbon dioxide away. But, you know, getting into the second half of 2022 here, Vijay, do we know how to do this in a useful, efficient way?
We've known how to do this for decades. One way to do it is really to allow fossil fuels to be burned and then to store it afterwards. That's expensive. It's fiddly. It's not going to happen unless there's subsidies of some kind. Another alternative is really to think about how do we take something like natural gas and turn it into hydrogen, a fuel of the future, an energy carrier that doesn't contribute to climate change. And when you take off that carbon dioxide, store that in the ground, for example, sequester it. And that approach of turning natural gas into hydrogen that can be burned cleanly and used in other ways, that's sort of the future that a number of parts of the world are looking at on how you use natural gas today, but future-proof it by getting your equipment hydrogen ready.
Right, but that's not something that's going to get us through the next couple of years given Russia and Ukraine.
Definitely not. But if you don't make plans for that now, all of the new fossil plants that are built are going to get locked in. That's exactly what countries like Germany are coming up with, policies that would compensate investors more for future-proofing their assets. And if they don't do that, they will not be given permits to build them.
Meanwhile, back with coal producers working hard to keep up with this new demand, and what had seemed like yesterday's fuel source is back, at least for now.
This is a golden year for coal, right? After 20 years in which people have seen it as environmental enemy number one. And so it really is something that we should try to move off of, and many countries have. But right now, we're using more coal than last year, and we're going to continue to do that because of the geopolitical problems of Russia, as well as the slower ramp-up of renewables that people are seeing in different parts of the world.
Vijay Vaitheswaran is the Global Energy and Climate Innovation Editor at The Economist magazine. His reporting on climate technologies and how they're shaping the energy transition was in the magazine's Technology Quarterly recently. Vijay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our producers are Jarrett Dang, Meredith Gerritsen, Ariana Rosas, Sarah Hawkins, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.